And welcome back to another edition of the Center Ring, TCR for short. We are coming at you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. Episode 16, if I am correct.
You are.
Excellent. My name's Tim. The other voice you just heard is Brandon. He is going to be the co-pilot for this journey into the esports unknown. Again, we are the Center Ring, your favorite esports podcast. And we have a show for you. Probably the best show yet. If I don't want to toot my own horn. But it's probably the best one that we've ever done. It is a packed one. Of course, we will always end the show with the micro. We have a very, very big weekend in esports. It was basically what I'd like to call the kickoff of the year 2016 in esports. You had Dota, you see CSGO, Genesis finally made a return back for the Smash community. We will discuss all of that. We had a very special interview with one Jason Roman. He basically was in the scene for Got Frag Days. Had a lot to do with stat keeping, things like that. Really, esports would probably not be where it is today if it wasn't for what they were doing over at GotFrag. So we have an awesome interview with him. But to start the show, because like I said, it is a doozy today, so we want to get right into it. We have the old TSM, the old TQM. Is the new Astralis.
I think, you know, Astralis does sound better. We've debated this for like 10 minutes now.
How it to could actually... be Astralis, for all I know. I have yet to heard it out of anyone's mouth other than our own. So that debate could be...
I think they should have stuck with TQM, personally.
I did too. I thought it was clever.
Yeah.
I liked TQM. I liked the idea behind it, the kind of tongue-in-cheek. The little question mark spelt wrong, like Denmark. I loved it. But, you know, I guess you can't always be in the shadow of your old organization that ditched you. So the new TQM, or the old TQM, is the new Astralis. They are doing, I think it would be safe to say, a industry first.
They're doing, well.
In the way they're doing it, I'd say.
So
anyways, to get to the start.
Yeah, let's break it down.
They are a player-owned organization.
All right. What player-owned organization in this instance seems to mean, based on their own press releases, and they also did a small AMA on the Global Offensive subreddit on Reddit, player-owned means these players have shares in the company, or in the company of Astralis. It's not...
They have a voice in decision-making.
Right. They are not the owner of the team. They are part owners in addition to the founders.
Which is more control than any other player has in their organization.
That's very true. Now, they did note that at this point in time, they didn't really go into specifics because they said there was like, they had to ask legal if they could even talk about it. But at this point in time, new players, like if someone were to leave and then someone were going to be coming in the team, would not necessarily get shares in the team. So it's a player-owned organization for these players.
It was catered to them.
Yes.
Which I can only assume that after you were ditched from one team, unexpectedly from outsider point of view, they probably knew this going in, that they wanted as much control that anyone would allow. Which is why if you kind of look at the terms and conditions, it's very friendly towards them. Like you said, like if someone leaves, I read where they will have 3 months of pay.
Yeah, 3 months of pain and they'll become a free agent.
If someone is kicked off the team, you're at least covered for 3 months.
Which is really good for the players. And if you go back to the Richard Lewis player union talk way back when, players were in this bind where they couldn't get out of a team because they didn't know if they were going to have another paycheck afterwards.
Well, it's great for the players, but I think it's great for the organization too. I mean, way to look like a top-notch professional organization by giving people severance packages.
Yep.
I mean, even in regular sports, you have some sort of guarantee to a contract or something like that along the lines to where if you were randomly cut, you would at least be taken care of a little bit to get your feet off the ground, especially in this case where you're not making tons of money. Speaking of making tons of money, though, based off of a topic that we talked about a few episodes ago, I think it was a few, where the transparency in esports that people are having issues with now, where we don't know what the organizations are making, we don't know how much players are making. Does it really matter if we know? That's a debate. But they did give the players complete control if they wanted to share that information. The organization said, we're not going to do it for them. If the player wants to keep their salary private, then by all means, we're not here to force that on them. But now, Zipnik did say in an interview, the very vague said in an interview, that their salaries were being $9,000 a month, though received offers at high as $10,000 a month, excluding bonuses. So they're making almost $100,000 a year, or over. I mean,
gross is $108,000 a year.
So take out taxes, probably somewhere in there, and I'm sure it's going to be about $100,000 a year, which is to do professional video games. I mean, again, we don't know how to compare that to. I think that was last episode we discussed it, where we don't. This is going to set the bar for other players, because now imagine, which I'm sure they make more money because they win all the time, but imagine if the guys on Fnatic were not making that. Do you think they would be happy with their organization if they realized that Astralis is making $9,000 a month, $100,000 a year for the sake of the conversation, and say Olaf Meister was making $6,000 a month, or even $8,000? I mean, the comparison would be obvious.
Do you know if what he said was in USD or not? Did it say in there?
The article has American money symbols.
Okay.
So I wish we had that research, but the world may never know.
Well, because I was just thinking, like, if that's in Danish krones, 108,000's only $15,832.
Okay, that can't be it.
Yeah.
We're going to go with that's not it.
Yeah.
But we're also going to put the disclaimer that I didn't do the interview, so don't yell at me. I'm just the messenger here.
So not only can they talk about their salaries, they can also talk about sticker distributions, prize money, stream revenue, any monetary transaction between the team and the players. They're fully able to disclose any way they want.
Up to the players, though.
Yeah.
Which, again, if the players are smart, they can use that to their advantage in many, many ways. When it comes to getting fans on their side, say they felt like they deserved more money. Or if they are planning on leaving a team, hey, this is what I'm making here. This is my price.
Right.
This is what I think I am worth. Now, we have seen where buying out a player or something can backfire. With transparency, in the sense of, we're not going to discuss it because it's already old news, because it happened right when we released last week's. But Titan is no longer an organization, in my opinion, almost a direct result to buying out
Scream.
Scream, thank you. Almost indirect results of buying out Scream for the amount of money that they did. And that was full transparency. We had that rough figure there.
It does make it a lot easier to see cause and effect. I agree with you on Titan not only buying Scream out for that money, but then getting about zero results out of it. I mean, finishing fifth and sixth in several tournaments afterwards, I mean, that's gonna hit. But it was also because of the whole cheating thing, or, you know.
Besides that, though, again, looking at this type of organization where the players do have more say in it, I think you won't see them leave. I know we're talking about, like, this is transparency good for other players when they want to move and everything. I think they like this setup. I think they're going to leave.
I imagine they love it.
I mean, they finally have a voice in this. They feel like they have some control over their own destiny.
And the fact that they waited a while to finally pick an organization means that they were really looking for something that they could stick with kind of long term.
And stay together.
Yeah.
I think that was also a big you don't think Zipnik had offers to go join other teams, or vice versa, individuals leave to make other teams or an organization pick them up? But I think this shows that that's not what they wanted. They wanted to stick together, they wanted the band back together, but they also wanted more control. They saw it from the other side of, Well, actually, they had it from the worst, where they said that the communication and everything was just awful before, because they were dealing with an American organization and TSM, and them being all the way on the other side of the world.
Right.
So they saw it from the worst side of things, and now they're, I mean, you could not have any more opposite than what they situated themselves in now.
The only thing I worry about long term is going to be the fact that this is backed by an early stage tech investor and an angel investor. So you're looking at tech money, which is normally big, but
if
they're spending real fast and they're going to burn out on cash, and you know, if they are not able to find another investor, especially if you're paying salaries as big as...
So we're looking at almost $100,000 a year. I'm assuming that's going to be per player. I can't imagine one announces his salary and the others agreed to take less. So we're looking at that roughly $500,000 for the players alone. They have a coach. So you're looking at paying out $500,000 a year?
Just for the players. And then you have to worry about travel expenses. Even though the CS teams are trying to force those expenses onto the tournament organizers.
And you are getting... if you place, you're getting some winnings back.
Right.
That's also a big deal. Prize pools are becoming bigger. Now that they have this backing, they might be able to feel more comfortable going to those bigger tournaments, or I say bigger as in the more long-distance tournaments, I guess.
The ones further away.
Yeah, right. How it might cost more for a plane ticket. They can feel more comfortable in that, knowing that they have that backing.
All I know now is we don't have a whole lot of information beyond their press release, which... it's their press release. I mean, you don't really need an explanation in the short AMA that happened. So we're going to have to keep our eyes on it and kind of see how it develops.
Like I said, it's a kind of the first of its kind in the sense of how they have it formatted. So I think it's going to be interesting to see exactly where all that takes it. But moving on, we do have that interview to get to. Again, it is with Jason Roman formerly of Gotfrag. He made a thing, basically, and we talk about it in the interview, so I don't want to waste a whole lot of time. But he is part of the lead developing team of GameSense, which was basically a revolutionary thing to track
statistics in 1.6.
Yes, and it kind of was and then never was, but we'll let the interview kind of tell the story there. So once again, this is Jason Roman. Well, let's introduce him now. Jason, how are you doing today, sir?
Good, how are you guys doing?
Not bad, not bad. You're in, what time is it there, around 9:30-ish?
Yep, 9:30.
All right, well, we won't keep you too long then. So, Jason, I guess, tell us a little bit about yourself. So, like I said, you were with Gotfrag, lead software developer there, is that correct?
So I joined them in the early 2000s. I actually came to them with a statistics system for Counter-Strike stats, and I kind of independently developed a system, and I was looking for a way to get it out there. You know, Gotfrag was the place to go for any esports related news. I came to them and we talked it out, and I hopped on board. We ended up calling it GameSense. A lot of people might be familiar with that. So I was a lead developer on that throughout its existence. And so I coded that, and then I worked with Jason Kuhn, who is the main developer of Gotfrag, and we worked on getting stats out there publicly for everybody.
I want to talk about GameSense since you brought it up there. Because reading through your profile on your website and everything, that's the one thing that catches our eye there. It's a statistical match tournament tracking system that Gotfrag used for any type of Counter-Strike and everything there. Was it only Counter-Strike?
No, I mean, we started to expand to different games. We started with Counter-Strike. It was a pretty simple transition to Counter-Strike Source. We also did it for Day of Defeat. Everything is built on the Half-Life engine, so, collecting the stats and everything was kind of a similar process. And we started looking at other avenues like Warcraft 3 or Halo, but we, never ended up publishing anything in regards to that. But Counter-Strike, Counter-Strike Source, and Day of Defeat were the main ones that we operated with.
So if you could kind of compare it, I know I've heard that nothing's really coming to comparison to GameSense as of yet, but if you can kind of compare it to something out there now, I don't know if you've kept up with the statistical software that they've got going. Is there any comparison into GameSense and nowadays?
You know, I've seen HLTV.org, you know, put out some stats, and a lot of things are, you know, either very similar or taken from the type of stats that we were doing. But, you know, it's, you know, we released in 2004, I think 2004, Winter CPL, and, you know, it's been well over 10 years, and I still don't think that anything is, I don't think anything's really matched it from what I've seen. And, you know, I think there's a few reasons for that. Some of them just related to, you know, I think we had a really good team working on it. And I think there's other situations like with CSGO and the availability of, you know, getting the data just to generate those type of statistics seems a lot more challenging now.
So it's interesting then that you... Yeah. That you brought up HLTV, because actually before the show, that was the one thing that we were kind of discussing this GameSense and everything here, and that's the one website that I could think of that kind of only does any kind of stat keeping out there, and even then it's a little sloppy in my opinion. There's some stats where you just don't even know what they mean. In your point of view, why do you think that is so? I know you just said it takes a lot of work and the teamwork and everything, but in esports as a whole, why do you think stat keeping in general isn't like a primary thing? Because my fear here, Jason, and maybe GameSense can save this, so maybe you need to bring it back. But I fear that when esports actually takes that turn into the norm, into mainstream, and we have our Hall of Fame, there is no way to go back and see who has most kills or any type of those records that you would typically see in a record book, because there's just the lack of stats keeping out there.
Sure. Well, you know, I've been kind of out of the esports game for a while, but, I kind of looked at it from a side, you know, in regards to like CSGO and the availability of generating stats. And, actually one of the things, touches on, you know, one of the earlier podcasts that you guys had where you were talking about our, you know, what's more important, developers or the gamers. And I think you guys talked about a lot of good angles, but there was one that was kind of missing. And from the perspective of developer support for getting that sort of information. So for example, you know, take a game like StarCraft or Heroes of the Storm, you know, like Blizzard, they might release a file format where you can retrieve some information from the match, but you can't actually go through and collect that data. You know, CSGO, I'm not actually sure what's in place. I imagine there is some sort of server logs or something that can be retrieved. But I think one of the challenges is getting support from developers. So I know you guys were talking about, like, you know, when developers change the game around and is it better for spectators? But I think a lot of what can push esports forward or make it go forward are the availability of tools for people. So something like, you know, Twitch came about on its own, and it's something that, you know, made it easy for everybody to watch other players. You know, right now there really isn't a lot of developer support from anybody to give other people tools to produce that information. So, you know, there's no like APIs or way to get information.
So do you think it's the developers? Do you think it's the developers kind of notice it being in their benefit to kind of keep that stuff on lock? I mean, I understand, like, the more access you allow to the data in the game, the easier it is to, you know, in the future, either cheat or, you know, mine it for different things, you know, nefarious reasons. So do they see it as kind of like you know, their baby. They don't want anyone getting in there and messing with it, and that's kind of why they keep it under closed doors.
You know, well, I wouldn't even say it's that. I mean, anything in regards to this takes, you know, takes a lot of developer time. You know, there has to be a plan in place. Like if we provide these tools for people, you know, how does that benefit us? You know, so if they're providing APIs or logs or different things, you know, they might want to develop those things themselves. They might want to develop a stats system themselves or run a league themselves, you know, and just, you know, being a developer myself and having worked for, you know, several large companies or corporations, it could just be as simple as, you know, we don't, you know, until esports gets bigger, we may not have a need for that yet. Or in a case of like Blizzard, where, you know, even you look at Overwatch, where they kind of removed a lot of the scoreboard information from the matches, it could be the philosophy. Like I interviewed there at Blizzard over the summer, and, you know, the philosophy has always been, you know, like the quality of the game first over data, things like that. So I don't think it's from the perspective you said. I think it might just be more of lack of a need that these developers or companies see to provide that, or they may want to provide it themselves, or lack of resources. It's I'm not really sure, but it can be frustrating for somebody such as myself or somebody out there like HLTV that would, you know, want to provide things for people.
So it's almost because the lack of demand, they're not supplying the supply. And really, because before recent history, there has never been the need for it, because before esports, there was no one looking back. I mean, unless it was just bragging rights, so you never needed stats.
Well, so it goes even further into more traditional sports too. Lerpus released an article today where he was answering mailbag questions, and one of them happened to deal with statistics in Counter-Strike, and his point of view on it is that statistics don't really tell you anything unless it can only be used to confirm what you already think by just watching the game. So it could be that, right, too, where people just don't even really want stats because it might disagree with what they see while they're watching the game.
Right. That's a good point. And, you know, I wholeheartedly disagree with that statement that they don't really tell you anything other than confirming what you see. I mean, you look at baseball, Moneyball, all that, you know, all these advanced statistics coming out like Sports VU and the NBA. There's so much information, and, you know, granted, sometimes it's just data that you can't draw conclusions from, but, there's a lot of information you can collect, you know, for example, with GameSense, I did an article on, I was calculating, and I wanted to see, you know, like if you get the first kill in the round, how important is that compared to how often you would win the round? And, you know, it didn't matter what map, it didn't matter, situation, what tournament it was. You know, we found a rule that you got the first kill in a round, the team won that 75% of the time. And if you got the first two in a round, the team would win 90% of the time. And, you know, all the way up to the first three in a round, that the team would win 98% of the time. And, you know, that doesn't mean you might change your strategy to just try to get the first kill no matter what, but, you know, it's relevant information. And we did stats on, you know, map balance, whether or not the CT or the T side was, you know, extremely imbalanced. You know, we were collecting information on, you know, this tournament used a 3-minute round time and this one used 2.5. And you could compare the stats and see, you know, is it more balanced to use one or the other? So there's a lot of information aside from just, you know, who's performing best in that match that you can look at. And then even from that perspective, you know, I still can't remember if it was me or Trevor Schmidt, we invented the assist stat that you see, you know, in a lot of FPSs and other games now, where, you know, you might be doing most of the damage to people and not actually getting credit for the frags. but you might actually be performing really well in that match. So there's, I really disagree with that statement that, you know, the looking at statistics just confirming what you've already seen with the match.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a big advanced statistics guy for hockey, and I'm constantly throwing numbers out there because I think it tells you more than what you can see with your own eyes. But just sure. to wrap up the game sense talk, if there could be, what was the most interesting statistic that you guys collected and saw? What was one of the just the craziest things you would have never thought you would see until you looked at the data?
I think it was we looked at every round that we had ever recorded, and we figured out the number of rounds that somebody won where. Say that all four of your teammates were killed, and it was a 1v5. And I can't remember the exact number, but I think the number of times somebody won a 1v5 was 7 out of 10,000 or something ridiculous like that. And you know, that it's not totally surprising a statistic, but it's just cool to kind of figure that out
when you see the actual numbers to it. Yeah, totally agree.
So there's that. Now, I did see real quick, I don't want to get too far because I don't want to keep you too long, and I want to bring up the MLG and all the Gottfrag and now how Activision purchased them. But real quick, because right. I was looking at your website, did you work on Punk Buster as well?
Yeah, that's actually kind of how I got started with just gaming. I was an avid Counter-Strike player, and I played since, Beta 6. And they had they detected cheats the normal way, but they had another feature that would take screenshots of players during the game. And they had it for Windows. They needed a version for, Unix-based systems. So, the guy who ran it put a call out, and, I told him, hey, I'd write that. So I wrote the program that converted their proprietary format to PNG and JPEGs. And allowed it to be scriptable, so server admins could automatically upload screenshots of players, and you could see whether or not they were, using wall hacks or aimbots or, things like that. I got started in Counter-Strike through that.
So have you ever had a friend call you and them tell you that you got them banned?
No, but it's funny because back in the day when the Counter-Strike.net forums were kind of like the main place, it was always when somebody got caught, it was always a giant thread about it and going through and then the person would say, hey, that wasn't me, or yeah, I'm sure the same thing happens now where people say, hey, somebody's using my account or
absolutely
or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just crazy to think I'm talking to the guy that helped develop every time you launched Counter-Strike and that little Punk Buster window yeah. popped up over your screen. Yeah. Okay. So let's get into the MLG talk. So you were actually a part of Gottfrag when MLG bought them out. Did you transition over to MLG employment at all, or did you kind of split ways with them during the original buyout?
It was kind of disappointing because I would say pretty much everybody got, or I would say nearly everybody got pushed out. The plan was, and when we sold, it was going to be, hey, this is great. We just have more funding now, or we can do more things. So we're going to keep going with this. I quickly got the impression that the buyout was more of a, purchase us for the assets of the site than actually wanting to continue forward and develop the system. We were actually, going back to GameSense, we were coming out with some incredible things. We were doing, we had a mod, or I wrote an Amex mod plugin that was going to allow, instead of just tournaments using GameSense like your normal pugs, you could record stats and have them individually for your teams. And we were adding XYZ coordinates to the log files, so you could have overheads and like you would have a shot chart in basketball. You could see where all the shots and the kills were. And we were we had so many things that we were close to completing. We actually had fantasy leagues coming out, not for like the daily fantasy you see now, but just traditional fantasy leagues. We had all these things coming out, and when we got purchased, it was like, great, you know, now we're going to have some additional resources and, you know, some extra salaries. And, it, you know, as soon as we got bought, my work on that completely stopped. And I think for a lot of people, the same thing happened. And it was kind of this limbo where everybody is wondering, all right, what happens next? And nothing happened next. It kind of just stopped.
It almost makes me upset hearing you talk about that, though, with all those things that never were, because those are the things that not only as a fan, as someone who considers himself trying to do a show, that would help out, but just right. Think of like how we were talking about with the advanced statistics. I mean, as a coach of a team, that's everything that you want. You want like almost like how like a heat map of where shots come from. And so if we're playing Fnatic, where on average on the B site does you know, JW shoot from? And that's something that would have shown.
Oh, absolutely.
It's actually pretty interesting to draw parallels now between, and it kind of makes me wonder where the negotiations actually happen, the parallels between MLG buying Godfrag and then Activision Blizzard now buying MLG, because it's a similar situation, it seems like, with it being mostly a purchase for the assets, not so much what was going on, but what has already happened, essentially.
Right. And, you know, I think you can draw some parallels there. I think, you know, the situation with Activision and MLG was a little bit different. Just, you know, I wasn't, you know, I was like anybody else in the dark. I had no idea this was happening, but I kind of got the impression that it was just kind of bailing them out of debt. And, you know,
right.
The way everything went down and, you know, what's happened to all of our shares now, it's kind of, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, back when it happened back then, it was disappointing. And when it happened now, it's just kind of, I wouldn't, if anybody's surprised by it, that would probably be a mistake, just because it's, I think anybody who's been around long enough could see something like this coming. You know, I never, after the buyout, when we got, you know, half in a buyout, a half in cash and half in shares, you know, back in 2007, I genuinely didn't think I would ever see anything from the shares. And if I did, I would just be happy I got something from it. So, you know, I mean, there's still a chance we might get something from it, but it's probably won't be worth the paper it's printed on. You know, that's kind of disappointing, but.
So just one or two more questions, because I don't want to keep you too long, but I definitely appreciate all the insight from here. As a shareholder, I guess from the outsiders, all we have are those articles, and it seemed like the communication from business side to shareholders was just not there. As a shareholder, right. I mean, have they communicated with you at all, or was the sale really, I mean, yes, you said you could see it coming, but was it as a surprise where, hey, by the way, your shares are now
not yours anymore?
Right. Well, no, I mean, there was actually a good article in Esports Observer that kind of went through the entirety of talking about, you know, incorporation laws in Delaware and how all this works. And, you know, the way everything is set up, certain levels of shareholders aren't obligated to, you know, have a vote or be a part of the meetings, or, you know, the only thing we're obligated is, Godfrag, we're Series B common stockholders. The only thing we're obligated is a letter of what happened after those decisions were made. So we essentially had no say. We weren't, you know, by law, they didn't really do anything wrong. We didn't have to be involved in any of that. None of us as a collective contained a majority of the stock. So, you know, I'm their letter is circulated around by now. You know, I got notified in an email. I was in the dark, as anybody else was about it. And, you know, at first I heard, okay, cool, they sold. And I'm thinking maybe I'll finally get something for the shares. But, you know, you look at what really happened, and they basically took MLG as a company, and they took, you know, it's like if it was a piece of pie and everybody had their hands in it or whatever. And so somebody took the pie and gave it to somebody else and left you with the pan that was in and said, well, this is what you guys own. I mean, sorry, it's a terrible analogy, but essentially they removed all the assets from the company, changed the name of it. So our stock now isn't, like, our Series B stock and all the shares we have aren't shares in MLG, and they're not shares in whatever Activision Blizzard owns of MLG. Our shares are in this MLG Legacy Holdings that they changed the company name to. So whatever our stock is worth is the value of that company, which is literally just a company in name that has no assets to it. And after all the liabilities are paid out, and, you know, I'm sure that there's a carve-out plan of extra money that's mostly going to go to the, you know, preferred stock members, but I have no idea what the shares are going to be worth. They were estimated, you know, like $27 a share or something, which was just, you know, probably plucked out of thin air. I don't know. But if they're worth 1 cent a share, I would be surprised at the end of all of this.
Fascinating stuff how things can turn around to where... Yeah. I mean, and it's like you said, from an outsider point of view, you would think MLG is on top in Major League Gaming, but crazy how they can buy out one company and then things just, they never really seem to get their feet on the ground after they bought out Gotfrag. It just seems like they bought out Gotfrag to get the assets and then just kept never really catching up to themselves.
Right. And it, you know, just having to constantly take out money, you know, they were generating all these assets, which, you know, were tangible things like tournament software and, you know, ability to run tournaments and whatever else. But, you know, from the perspective, if you just watch them over the years, you know, it's hard to see where they ever had a plan that would generate revenue. And it seems like they never really did generate revenue. It was probably mostly just, you know, sponsorship money from the companies that they were running games for, or, you know, advertising, vice versa. And it's funny because I feel like with Gotfrag and some of the things we were doing, we could have actually gotten some good revenue generation, something like, you know, an ESEA type system. And, you know, I just, the way everything went down, I think it was kind of short-sighted because the talent that Gotfrag had and the passion everybody had working there, I think they could have done something with it. And, I think they were mostly focused on console gaming at the time and just wanted the assets. So it's kind of too bad.
That's a story of MLG's life. All the talent and just squandering it away.
Well, no one can question what Gotfrag was and has contributed to it. And even then, I mean, GameSense, I think we can look back when in the future when we finally have something. And I think people will look back at GameSense and say, you know, that's what kind of stemmed it all.
I think you should get back at it, Jason. You need to kickstart that GameSense stuff again. I need some advanced statistics.
I might look into it. I've been out of the game for a while, and I'm itching to do some stuff and possibly do some esports stuff. So,
if just to make our show research easier,
yeah,
that's the only reason you need. That'd be great. Well, Jason, I appreciate you coming on the show so much. We were huge fans of Gotfrag, so when Alchemist gave us your contact information, we knew we couldn't pass it up to have another tale down memory lane.
Sure.
So,
it was great, you know, appreciate you guys having me on. It was great talking to you guys.
No, absolutely. The pleasure was all ours. And if you get back into the scene, let us know. We'd love to, kind of touch base with you and see where we're at.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Not an issue there, sir. Well, Jason, what's your Twitter? We always like to pimp that out for our guests.
Sure. It's _ Jason Roman. Real simple. Somebody took Jason Roman, so I put an underscore in front, and there we go.
Those Twitter squatters, man, I'm telling you, they get me every time. I'm like, oh, I need a new name. Oh, someone's had that account for 6 years with one tweet.
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, Jason, hey, thanks again then for coming on the show, and we'll keep in touch, okay?
All right, thanks for having me. Talk to you guys later.
Once again, a big thanks to Jason for taking the time out of his day to, you know, kind of waste some time with us here discussing... First off, the MLG, that was fascinating to hear him kind of go as much in depth with all the way the stocks and everything were handled with them. I was kind of surprised he went into as in depth as he did. But we definitely appreciate it there. And again, it does make me upset knowing what we talked about it after the interview. I think if MLG would have handled the purchasing of GameFrag better.
GotFrag.
Or what did I say? GameFrag?
GameFrag, yeah. GotFrag, yeah. We got you.
GotFrag, GameSense, it's all the same. If they would have handled the purchasing of GotFrag better, I think we could be looking at a completely different landscape in esports where MLG really was the major league of gaming.
I totally agree. It would have been just having that information would have been enough. I mean, people already go to hltv.org for all of the statistics. If you would have had not just GameSense, but GameSense plus 8 years now of development, I can't even imagine what it would be right now.
And the world will never know.
Because now MLG is a shell.
A shell of its former self. How deep is that? So let's move on here. We have, speaking of a shell of their former selves, we have the kicking off the 2016 year of esports. There's so much of it. I want to get into the CSGO Star Ladder iLeague. That was this weekend. Basically a little 8-man tournament, which seems to be about average when it comes to these kind of deals nowadays. Teams such as, X-Titan was there. That's their new name. At the time, G2 Sports, Team Envious, to name a few. Of course, Fnatic was there. They won. I don't want to get all the way through, last to first like we always do, just because we have so much to discuss. I do want to discuss one thing here, though. I have a few bullet points. G2 concerns me. I was watching them play LG, and G2 looked completely lost. They lost 2-0 to LG during the group stage. And they had no idea. It looked like they seriously had no idea what to do. Their positioning was terrible. Everything about it just looked off to me. Like, there was no communication. Ever since Dennis left G2, ever since he did them dirty, the dream has died for G2.
Well, I mean...
And of course, I don't think he did them dirty, but he did.
I did see AZ was at least top of the team, wasn't he, for the tournament? Or he played well, right?
He played well.
And I was like, I remember commenting on the fact that he went from Dignitas, like them not being able to keep up, and now he's on G2 and they're not able to keep up. But it is weird, you touched on it, that with Dennis, they were able to perform much better. And I mean, Dennis is better than AZ, but it's not...
With Dennis, they were... I felt... We discussed on the show with Dennis, man. G2, it felt like they were right there. They got a cool
We were
cool
talking about getting
logo.
Shirts and stuff.
Yeah, they have this samurai logo, and everybody's working good, and they were placing second place, and then Fnatic had to go and ruin it. And Pronax left Fnatic, and they stole Dennis away... From the Cinderella story.
Are we blaming Pronax for G2's downfall now?
Oh, that seems fair.
Okay.
That seems about fair. So I actually tweeted this out, that the argument, the story, the go-to joke in CSGO is NA versus EU, and the fact that there's just no competition there, right? But that's always the story of NA teams versus EU, and Luminosity is thrown somewhere in that mix. But I think for 2016, we shouldn't be looking at NA versus EU anymore. We should be looking at Fnatic versus the world. Because they picked off right where they left off in 2015, winning their first tournament of the year, and it wasn't even close. They dominated.
Rolled over Na'Vi.
They lost one match, I believe, all tournament. And that was their very first against Envious. Envious was the only one to defeat them this entire tournament. Then they came back and walked over them. And it's like you said, in the finals, they played Na'Vi, which Na'Vi had a really good tournament. It was basically their home turf. The entire crowd was behind Na'Vi. But Fnatic embarrassed them. I mean, what do you think was going through Na'Vi's mind? As the crowd is chanting their name, you have everything there on your side. And yet, on Dust2, the first map of the finals, You go into halftime down 12-3. In Dust 2, you are down 12-3 at halftime. You know there is no coming back from that. None whatsoever. And then you're like, hey, we'll get him. Don't worry, guys. We'll get him the next map. Guardian, he'll turn it around. He always does. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Cobblestone's our next map. It's our map. We're good. Wrong. Because they end up losing that 16-7.
And Guardian actually did have an amazing round on Dust 2, but that amazing round was, you know, one round. The rest of them were all... And the thing that worries me the most about this, the fact that it's happening, is that during the last month of 2015, Fnatic basically said, we're not even running strats, we're just trying to work on our timing, like trying to like peak at the same time. So they're not even, you know, they're not even really trying yet.
And I will say this, even though I'm getting a little, okay, I'm not getting, I am there. I'm tired of seeing Fnatic win. I wish VP was in this tournament. I feel like VP is one of the only teams that can really stand a chance against Fnatic, yet they seem to always fail getting to the finals to play Fnatic because some team always defeats them in the long run. But I think their play style matches well against Fnatic. There was some parity, though, in this little 8-man tournament. Even though Fnatic ended up winning and Na'Vi was in second place, which seems to be every tournament, you did have some parity. Like I said, Envious beat Fnatic. Na'Vi beat Envious. And then Fnatic ended up beating Na'Vi. So there was a lot of trading wins and losses in this tournament between teams that defeated others. So you do have that parity there. But I just wish someone would beat Fnatic. That's really my only beef with this. Just someone beat Fnatic. I just don't want to see them win anymore.
I would compare this to the Patriots, but I know you like Tom Brady.
Yes, I actually like the Patriots. But still, we kind of discussed this, and we'll actually lead this into the next big event on the weekend, because we compared this during our show meeting, where we go from one where we said we wish there was more parity to another esport in Super Smash Brothers, specifically Melee on this one. But there was everything there. And of course, I am speaking of Genesis 3. That took place over the weekend. Again, you see the big names there as well. For some reason, though, I'm not tired of it.
It's seriously the same three every single time.
I know it's the same handful of guys every time for Melee, but that's okay. It's something about an individual sport, like Smash, compared to a team sport. I want to see the legends fight it out in a fighting game.
So
it's always cool to see the Cinderella story, but at the same time, like in this one, for instance, Nintendude ended up eliminating Mewtwo King in the losers, round six of the loser bracket. And I was really upset about that because I love watching Mewtwo King. I love watching his goofy little posture as he has one leg over the other, just looking so weird, and yet he's dominating kids. Yet he looks so uncomfortable sitting in those chairs. So Genesis 3, though, I want to touch on Genesis 3. For those who don't know the story behind Genesis 3, it's kind of actually fascinating the way it all started. Basically, well, you know what? I'm going to pump the brakes. We never do repeating segments on this. I'm going to do a repeating segment. We're going to do The More You Know.
The more you know about an impending disaster, the more likely you are to do something about it. That's why we're embarking on a campaign of public service messages, news stories, and community activities designed to make you familiar with the deepening crisis. And our campaign is called, appropriately, The More You Know.
Thank you, sir. So we're going to do this. We've actually never done a repeating segment on this except for the micro. So, hey, first time for everything. So The More You Know, our series about things that you are going to know more about. So Genesis, what is Genesis when it comes to Super Smash Brothers? Basically, it's another homegrown tournament that the Smash community made up. It started out in California. Smash has a definitely deep tradition as far as grassroots tournaments go. You have things like the Big House. I think that spawns mainly from no internet connection. So you had to start it up as a
multiplayer. Yeah.
I mean, the only way you could play it was with people coming over, and that's 10. Hey, I have a buddy who wants to come. Okay, I got a buddy who wants to come. Anyway, so this started back in 2009, July 10th, 2009. Genesis was born. A group for that started it. Let me see here. I have this somewhere in my notes. I did not plan to do this. DBR. DBR actually started the very first Genesis here. They're basically a community of Smash guys. They started 1 and 2. They're kind of MIA in the scenes, but they're still around. They just don't really go by the name. But Genesis 1 started in July 2009. One of the big significance with this is the birthplace of Mango versus Armada. This is the very first time that as a North American, you saw Armada. Before this, he was a strict European player. This was the first trip in 2009 that Armada came to America. So this is where you saw the birthplace of the rivalry that is. So that is a huge, huge milestone. I mean, it's a huge marker in the history of Melee, where you have arguably the best in the world. This is where he started as far as North American scene goes. This was also, at the time, one of the biggest, actually it was the biggest Melee tournament in the history of the game.
Genesis 1, right?
Genesis 1 was the biggest Melee tournament in the history. It held that title for 1 year. Pound 4 ended up taking it the next year. So I want you to just remember, biggest in the history, it had 290 entries. As far as single competitors go. Okay? Mango ended up defeating Armada in that one. Mango won first. Armada won runner-up. That was after, again, Armada's debut. He did not drop a set in that entire tournament until the grand finals against Mango. So they had to play...
Mango is going up against the...
They had to play double sets to finish it off. But he did not lose a single one until then. So again, this is not just, it's a milestone of a tournament as far as what you, I mean, you hear about these rivalries now in Melee. This is where it all started. Genesis 2 actually did not come for another 2 years. July 15th, 2011 is when Genesis 2 started up. Again, ran by DBR, the group DBR. Exact same thing. You actually had a smaller entry, though, for this one. 228. Though we're talking about that rivalry again. Armada versus Mango once again in the finals. This time, though, Armada takes the victory. So, again, you have that rivalry being cemented right there. You had Genesis 1, Mango versus this new kid Armada who's just dominating the scene all of a sudden. Mango ended up taking first. Genesis 2, 2 years later, Armada returns and defeats Mango, the American prodigy. So it also thickens there. That was July 2011. Okay? July 2011 was Genesis 2. Genesis 3 just took place last weekend, and it started January 15th, 5 years later. Why it took 5 years between 2 and 3, I couldn't really find anything other than goofy timing issues and commitment issues. DBR no longer runs it. A guy called Bobcat, he was the kind of the runner of this one, kind of the organizer on this one. He's a local Smash guy from California, so he kind of took the reins on it. But again, so 5 years later, Genesis is reborn. The hype is unreal. The prize pool on this one was 23,000 plus compared to Genesis 2, which was around 7,000. We went from 228 entries to around 1,800. So it completely blew up. Now, keep in mind, in between that, you have Evo, growing the scene. You have, well, we said the Big House is starting. That's growing the scene. MLG has Smash. So there's a lot of things in between helping the scene grow. But I mean, it went from 220 to about 1,800 entries. It more than doubled the prize pool. The hype was unreal for this to make a return. This time it was in San Jose, California. So it's still in the neighborhood, grassroots, everything there. So it kept that feel to it. Again, the story between Genesis, I want to stress. Mango versus Armada, Armada versus Mango. This one did not disappoint because Armada and Mango ended up meeting in the grand finals yet again. The rivalry continues for Genesis. Mango, to me, has been having some off tournaments lately. And here he is. He actually went from the loser bracket and fought all the way back. He made it into the loser's bracket before the round six, everything there for losers. He fought through the loser's bracket, made it to the grand finals against Armada, and even forced a second set. So he actually ended up forcing Armada into the loser's bracket, and then they played a winner-take-all, you know, match there. Insane. The video's up everywhere. You can basically look it up. We'll have it on our YouTube if you want to watch it in the background of us discussing. But it's just insane on how Genesis is kind of formed. So that was a very unformatted, unprepared...
You didn't even touch on Hungry Box.
Well, because that's, again...
How do you think he feels being the third guy?
Again, this is not about Hungry Box. This is about Armada exactly. And Mango.
How do you think he feels about that?
Hungry Box is fine. He's fine. Actually, there's a... he was playing Mango. That's it for The More You Know. I hope everyone enjoyed it. So, he was actually playing Mango in one of these. I'll have the video up. And there's a part of the level, so... Hungry Box is playing Jigglypuff like always, and Mango's playing Fox. Or maybe it was Falco. They're the same thing. So they're like underneath the stage, and they must have. Hungry Box, they were basically even falling. And I guess Jigglypuff's hitboxes hit. I don't know Smash's terminology, so forgive me, fanboys. But Jigglypuff's, Hungry Box's hitboxes must have hit the death box beforehand, and he ended up dying. And the look on his face, he doesn't even move. And then he just smiles a little bit, so you know it's all okay, but you know deep inside,
it's tearing
him
up.
He was raging. Raging hell's fire. It was awesome. I love Melee. It's just, the stories behind it is awesome. Like I said, it sucks that Nintendude ended up defeating M2K. Especially my hatred for Nintendude and his Ice Climbers bullshit. Of doing the wobble.
So let me ask you a question about Armada. Do you think he's the most dominant esports competitor right now?
I think...
Before you answer that, listen to this. So 2016, obviously, one first place finish. Genesis right. 3. 2015, he had 13 first place finishes. 4 second, 2 third, and 1 fifth to sixth place finish. 2014, 9 first place, 5 second, 1 third, and 2 fourth place finishes. Now, I have no idea exactly how many tournaments he entered in those years, but 13 of, you know, 30, almost half of his tournaments, he finished first place in.
If he was playing anything other than Melee, I mean, he's making a nice living playing Melee, which is saying something because just now the prize pools are becoming respectable.
Right.
I think he is. He is. If you're looking at esports competitor as far as individual plus a team, like, so we're just including all of Fnatic, right?
Yeah, Fnatic is Fnatic.
Okay. I think he has to be up there, at least top three.
Where would you, I mean, what about Nip back in the day? Nip or Armada?
I think Armada. I just,
there you go,
that right. Consistency though, I mean, it's just insane. If he was playing any other sport with bigger prize pools, the guy would have nothing to worry about.
And looking at the finishes, and it's like, it'll be like 4 or 5 first place and then a random second place thrown in there. He's definitely one of the most consistent competitors I've looked at in esports.
And he's so European. Just like you look at him and you know he's European. He's so Armada and he's so European. Walking up there with his leather jacket. Just so European. One thing I did, so of course, Armada won his second Genesis, obviously repeating from G2 there. Also part of, we haven't discussed it, we're about to, but he's also part of Alliance. So Alliance, the organization Alliance, had a pretty nice weekend as far as victories go. Zero ended up winning Smash U, like he always does. I didn't watch as much Smash U as I should have, but I don't like his face.
You're a purist.
I don't like Zero's face.
Also, didn't have to do with the game.
I don't know what it is. It's his scarf.
Speaking of which, they had Gunner Optics on sale on Amazon today if you wanted to pick up a pair for your cosplay.
I can't wait to give me a pair. Anyone who wears Gunner Optics, man, I just instantly judge. You could be an amazing person, but I instantly judge you for wearing Gunner Optics. Other than that, I mean, that was Genesis in a nutshell. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it. Can't wait for the next Melee tournament, which, by the way, I have no idea what that is off the top of my head. I did not write it down in my notes. I want to say, actually, PAX South in San Antonio in like 2 weeks that I was supposed to go to, but no longer am because we're going to MLG. Side note, though, did you see ESPN has like this schedule up?
A calendar.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how is ESPN all of a sudden in esports for like 2 weeks and they were able to put together what no other website was able to ever put together? They have a calendar of every notable esport event for like any game.
It's a lot of data entry, and ESPN
literally has been on the scene for like 2 weeks.
But they have the people to do it.
That is ridiculous. And all these other esports websites should be ashamed.
Can you imagine all the unpaid interns there are like entering Counter-Strike on a calendar and have no idea what it is? Like, why am I putting this on a calendar?
It's ridiculous.
Anyway.
But I definitely appreciate them doing that.
Getting back to Alliance.
Yes, getting back to Alliance and the weekend that was that kicked off 2016. Of course, you had the star ladder for Counter-Strike. Well, you also had the star ladder for Dota 2.
Which Alliance actually defeated the NA Dream EG 2-0.
We held the crown for a little bit, guys.
Yeah, we had it for a moment.
We tried.
Which, you know, so the star ladder setup was interesting that they alternated on Twitch. They alternated between Dota 2 and CS games.
I hated it. Can I just say I hated it? I really wanted to like it because like, this is great. It's cross promotion, which for someone who works in radio, you love cross promotion. I hated
it. It's such a change of speed though.
I think that's what it was. The chat was even more awful than normal. And the fact that I told you, I think they were only using one stage and they were swapping back and forth. Not only could you hear like the Russian commentators over all the other commentators reason, the in-between matches, whether that was you watching Counter-Strike or you wanting to watch Dota, in-between matches were like hours. And for someone who was watching at work on mute, I guess I don't know if they announced that, hey, this match is coming up in 3 hours. So you have time to go do things. So I didn't like that. But continue your...
So Alliance ended up going 2-0 against EG. And it wasn't so much Alliance winning as much as it was EG failing. They went kind of crazy on their drafting and bans in the first game. And it ended up backfiring really bad. They lost a bunch of team fights and then ended up giving the GG, which is a whole interesting concept I think every esport should adopt, where when you can tell a game's gone, just GG and get it over with. Like, why do I need to watch the last round of a 16-3 match between Fnatic and Na'Vi? It's over.
So you gotta fight till the end. Anyway, that was always our motto in high school. You never quit out of a Halo 2 match. You play till the end.
Then that's only because it deranked you. Either way, they ended up getting wiped after pushing a tier 1 tower bottom lane in game 1 and called GG after that. In the second game, you could tell EG was kind of freaking out about it. Being down one game in a best of three, you know, you've only got one more, and everyone knows anything can happen in a best of one. The drafting genius, as he's constantly called, PPD, ended up playing more towards Alliance's strengths. He banned two of the heroes that Alliance picked in the first game, I guess hoping to throw them off or seeing if they were going to go with the same comp. But in the process, ended up basically repeating game one. They just couldn't get in, get through the team fights. Ended up getting wiped again and then just called GG, which was impressive for Alliance, who ended up only going 3-2 through the group stages. They beat EG in group stages as well to secure the second place seed. All the group stages were best of one. And then through the playoffs, Alliance only lost the first game of the first match to Team Secret and then went completely undefeated the rest of the way through. And who knows how dominant they could have been, considering Alliance was the one that originally was, they were even wondering if they could make it to the tournament with some flight delays and issues. And they actually originally rescheduled their matches to, let's just say, thanks to the power of Reddit. Reddit kind of campaigned to have them rescheduled as opposed to...
Reddit bullied them, is what you're saying?
Yeah, as opposed to being forfeited.
So the one thing that doesn't make me completely crushed for America losing is, so Alliance was one of those teams that got me actually interested and invested in the competitive Dota 2 scene. They ended up winning. So Alliance was the former victor of TI-13. And back then, they weren't really a huge team or anything like that. They were kind of the underdog story from what I remember. And so when TI-14 rolled around, or I'm sorry, when TI-14 rolls around, they were kind of the big news story. How are they going to perform? They didn't perform that well, long story short. But still, it's always that memory that I have of Alliance and everything there. So it was very cool to see them back to a winning fashion and everything there. It does suck that EG lost, but what can you do? It's just a tournament.
Well, second place finish, you know.
We'll bounce back. NA will take the crown again. And
NA dream right there. Go EG.
You know, you can have Counter-Strike. You can have Counter-Strike. We have Dota. We have one team in Dota that we are clinging to dear life on. That's okay. So let's move on to the micro here to wrap this piece up. Just a few things to go over. Some big news actually broke the other day, today possibly. Heroes of the Storm announced, or I guess Blizzard announced, a Heroes of the Storm 2016 season almost. The spring global championship. Basically, teams from all around the world are in this massive Heroes of the Storm League that eventually will be giving out $4 million in prize pool throughout the year of 2016. Qualifiers and all that, actually it already started around January 15th.
I missed my chance.
Right? We missed the sign-up. Apparently they didn't want us. Korean Super League started January 13th, and that actually ends March 30th, which is right before the actual championship starts April 1st. So, and that is actually in Seoul, South Korea. Interesting pick, I think. I always thought Blizzard, being an American company, would keep things in America, grow that American scene.
I'm pretty sure the hot scene is much more popular over there than it is here.
Well, and that's where their Counter-Strike, or not Counter-Strike, StarCraft baby is.
Yep.
StarCraft is huge over in South Korea. That's where that gained its esports popularity primarily. So I could see why they feel like they have some ground to stand on over there. I just was a little disappointed, if you will, that it wasn't here. I was kind of hoping for it to, you know, but again, this is only the spring. Maybe they're trying to do a world tour where they'll have one. Maybe the actual championship will be here. But
it's usually at BlizzCon, so it'll probably be here.
Yeah, so that's, you know, we'll see. I think they have three seasons, spring, summer, and fall. So I bet you the fall will be BlizzCon, which might be MLG, which might not be MLG, but still BlizzCon. everything is messed up now. Everything is everything, and it's very confusing to follow.
Consolidation. Speaking of MLG and qualifiers, Enemy GG won the qualifier to participate in the next qualifier.
And yeah, okay. I was really confused on this one.
So, Enemy GG won the minor championship. The minor championship winner is guaranteed a spot in the major qualifier. If you win the major qualifier, then you get to go to the major.
Okay. I mean, it sucks. It's a really long roundabout way. But yeah. I guess if you needed a way to have a small tournament, that's the best way to do it.
And so the minor championship was basically teams that hadn't participated in any other major or major qualifier before. And that's why you had a bunch of smaller or new teams, I should say. The next thing, the major qualifier, is the invited teams plus the minor winner. So that's where you're going to see some real competition. And good luck, Enemy GG. I wish you the best of luck in that. Optic Gaming, where you at?
Good riddance. Deny my interview request. See what happens.
I thought you guys were going to pull it out, and you didn't.
Do you see what happens when you don't give me the interview I request, Optic Gaming? You lose. That's not coincidence. Overall, though, I thought it was a pretty good tournament as far as production value go. Friend of the show, Alchemist. I don't really know what he does for MLG, but I'm going to give him all the credit for it.
He does all of the in-game camera. He, like, manages all the in-game camera people.
Well, I'll give him credit then. It was a very good one. Obviously, again, I think it's all leading up to the major. I think all this is just as much practice for the team than it is for the actual organizations. When I say team, I mean the MLG production team there. Props to MLG. It looks like they finally updated their website to look less garbage. And
still no news, though.
That needs to be right up there. And they finally broke and made a Twitch channel. They finally did it, and go figure, it had like 40,000 viewers on it. Because people want Twitch. They don't want to go to MLG and watch their 720p garbage quality stream there. I love you, MLG, but your streams are awful. So they finally broke on Twitch. One thing here that I wanted to bring up for the micro. Geico actually is officially sponsoring TSM, the organization TSM. The reason I'm including this in the micro, normally a new sponsorship I don't care about, but I always ask the question, when are big companies going to start sponsoring teams? I know Red Bull sponsors a team and things like that, but I mean like Geico. Geico is not one that you would typically expect to sponsor a esports team. So I thought that was noteworthy, which is what the micro is all about. That's all I have. I really have no other opinion other than the big boys are finally starting to sponsor esports teams.
Going back to TSM, and this is the new TSM, not the old TSM, as we were so confused earlier today.
Look, it's like the Phoenix Coyotes. They'll always be Phoenix to me. I'll never call them Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah, that's fair.
I will probably never call Astralis. That's they will TSM. Always be TQM to me, or old TSM. They'll always be old TSM.
So TSM, the org, has signed three former Complexity members in Symphys, Automatic, and Sick, as well as FNS from CLG and Vice from Denial Esports to form their new Counter-Strike Global Offensive team.
Good stuff. Sounds like a bit of a ragtag team, but what did you expect when they said that we want a North American team? And I think it's going to be competitive. I think it's going to be about as competitive as any other team in that level of play is.
I feel like it could have been a lot better if they would have just got Stewie 2K.
Well, they can't get Stewie 2K because Cloud9 picked them up. And Cloud9 basically has already played with everybody else on the team, so they're not going to pick up them again. So they were stuck with Stewie 2K, and that's the way it works.
That is the shallow kiddie pool of talent of NA Counter-Strike talent.
NA is a giant rotating door of the same players going to different organizations. But that is it. just like the NA hopes and dreams, so is this show. It's over. Episode 16 of the Center Ring TCR is done. It's in the books for now. The date, I think I didn't mention this in the open, is January 19th, just to hold accountability that we didn't miss any news stories that break right after the time we post this, because it always happens. I'm sure next week, ESL will be no more or something. Again, you can always find us on Twitter. The show is at The Center Ring. The website is tcr.gg. You can personally find us on Twitter. I'm at Pirate Mushroom. You are at...
Brand Any New.
So check us out there. Let us know what you think of the show. We'll always get back to you. We have literally nothing going on Twitter. We always have the podcast open, but we are on YouTube now, so check us out. Go to the website tcr.gg and scroll a little bit down and you'll see a YouTube link. You click that, you can see YouTube's there. We will always have that up there within 2 days of recording. We're really slow guys when it comes to editing video, but get over it. We don't have unpaid interns here. So again, that is the show. Episode 16 of TCR is in the books. I thank you so much for listening. Thank you again to Jason Roman for taking the time out of his night to discuss what he discussed with us. It was amazing stuff. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.